OLTU.com.
Sign Language with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 139 of Sign Language. My goodness, two episodes in a week. What is going on, people? A couple of things to cover this week. I got an email from a guy called Tom Ferguson, who describes himself as an avid listener to Shutters Inc. Okay, so he's obviously listening to both Shutters Inc. and Sign Language. Okay, fair enough. Bruce, I wanted to know if you had an opinion on digital audio recorders. I'm setting up to record a lot of vinyl records and wanted a simple method to get the audio initially digitized and then move to the computer located on a different floor of the house to finish up. Rack mount preferred. The Gemini DRP1 digital rack mount recorder looks like it might do the trick, but I wanted to know if you had other suggestions. Thanks, Tom Ferguson. Well, Tom, thanks for the email. I had a look at the specs. Now, first of all, I've got to say, Gemini, I have never, ever, 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 ever heard of. I know nothing about this brand. I don't know whether they're quality, whether they're dodgy crap. I'm sorry, I'm not in a position to pass judgment on the brand itself. I had a look at the specs for it. And for those who are interested, 19-inch rack mountable, 1-inch high, or one unit high, rack mount design. Full color LCD, records mono or stereo, records to 128, 256, and 320 kilobit MP3 files, and WAV at 16-bit 44.1. Record direct to the included SD card right out of the box. It comes with a 1 gig card, which is not going to get you far, but it'll certainly at least capture an album's worth on at 44.1 and 16-bit, but it won't be enough to cover a double album, so you might want to be thinking about another SD card if you go with this particular unit. It'll take an SD card up to 4 gigs, or an SDHC card up to 32 gigs, either of which would certainly get you out of trouble. Record to direct to USB flash drive, any capacity but not included. Combo XLR quarter-inch mic inputs with a mic line switch. Front and rear RCA inputs, quarter inch line input, quarter inch headphone line output, balanced XLR outputs, RCA outputs, rotary headphone volume control, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Doesn't look like a bad unit based on the specs. What does concern me is that it'll only record to WAV in 16-bit 44.1. Now, admittedly, if you are going to create MP3 files of all this vinyl, then you're going to end up wanting a 44.1 16-bit WAV file anyway. However, let's just take a step back, or a couple of steps back. In order to digitize your vinyl, you will need a preamp. A preamp designed for vinyl with an RIAA EQ curve and all that sort of stuff. And hopefully you're already across that, Tom. Most of those vinyl preamps, if they are a standalone unit, have RCA outputs, which means it's an unbalanced signal, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And so any unit that you look at, you should be definitely looking for something that's got unbalanced input, whether it's on RCA or 6.5 mil tip ring and sleeve. Doesn't really matter because you can get a cable to do, you know, either of those transfers. The thing about it is that if you were to go with this unit, which will only record 44.1 16-bit, you want to make sure that you set your preamp so that you're getting a nice hot signal going into the inputs of the flash recorder, right? You don't want to be going in low. The whole thing about bit resolution, and hopefully you're up to date with all of the back issues of Sign Language. The thing about bit resolution is that if you're capturing in 16-bit and then having to process the file, then you are going to start, you know, making sacrifices. If you had a different recorder which was capable of capturing at 24-bit, then it wouldn't be such an issue if you weren't, you know, recording super hot. You know, if you didn't get your peaks to within 3 dB of full scale, it wouldn't be the end of the world. At 16-bit, is it going to be the end of the world? No, it's not. But as a purist, I would, you know, prefer that if we're going to capture to 16-bit, then we want to get the signal hot but without clipping on the way in, because we don't want to have to then adjust or process those files before we turn them into MP3s. So having said that, that's one concern for me, that it only does 44.1 at 16-bit. I could tolerate it only doing 44.1 if it just gave you the option to do 24-bit, but it doesn't. So with that in mind, I wrote some concerns down here. One of them was that the wave only at 44.1.16. The second was no products available on their site. To me, that's a little bit of a worry. When I go to a manufacturer's website and you go to their product drop-down menu and everything you click on comes up with a page that says, sorry, there are no products in this category. That's a bit of a worry. Maybe their website's still under development. I don't know. That, to me, is just ringing alarm bells. And the third one I had was as an unknown brand, which, you know, that's not necessarily an indication that there's an issue, but, you know, I think as human beings, we just naturally want to steer towards brands that we know and maybe have a little bit of faith in. Other alternate options, the first of which is not a rack-mounted unit, and that's the Zoom H6. Now, unfortunately, I couldn't find a price for the Gemini unit that you told me about, Tom, so I don't know, you know, what sort of budget you've got. Or what they were asking for that particular unit. So what I've done is looked at a few units that are available through Sweetwater.com. They tend to be the go-to place for audio gear online, particularly if you're in the US. So the Zoom H6, like I said, it's not rack-mounted, but it has all the bells and whistles. It will do up to 96K at 24-bit. Which is way more than you need. It has XLR tip, ring, and sleeve combo inputs, and it's on Sweetwater at $399.99, so $400. The links will be in the show notes for you, so you can just click on the links if you want to suss out any of these products that I'm talking about. So that's one option. After that, we've got a couple of units from Tascam, the SSR-100 and SSR-200. Both of these are 19-inch rack unit, rack mountable. However, both of them, again, only capture at 44.1 and 16-bit. A bit of a shame. The R100 only has RCA inputs, so unbalanced only. The SSR200 has both RCA and XLR inputs. They are $500 and $600 respectively. Again, links will be in the show notes. Then there's the Marantz PMD 620 Mark II. Now, again, this is not a rack-mounted unit. This is a sort of a handheld recorder. 1/8-inch input only, but does 48K and 24-bit. And it's $429. Unfortunately, the unit that I would recommend is the one that I am recording to right at this very moment, which is the Marantz PMD 580. Unfortunately, they have discontinued the product, which is a real shame. I love this thing. I bought this unit when my DAT machine died. I used to have DAT, you know, from the mid-90s through to... Oh, when did I buy this? I don't know, maybe 2008, maybe? At a guess. I don't know. I can't remember exactly. So yeah, my DAT machine died and I thought, well, there's not much point buying a new DAT machine, even though I could have still bought one at that point. It's a dying format. Although it would do 44.1 and 48K, it's limited to 16-bit and it's a linear format. You know, you've got a spool tape. why the hell would you bother? So that's, you know, when the, my DAP machine showed that it was starting to die of old age and it was just wasn't worth the expense of getting it repaired, I started looking around for a rack-mounted flash recorder. And at the time, Marantz had the PMD. They had a 560 as well as the 580. I can't remember what the difference was in the specs. But something made me steer towards the 580. And I'm fairly certain that when I bought this, I paid around about 600 Australian. Now, this thing has analog unbalanced, analog balanced, digital unbalanced, and digital balanced, right? So you've got AES EBU for your digital balanced, in and out. SPDIF, in and out for, you know, digital unbalanced. You've got XLRs, both in and out for analog balanced, and you've got RCA in and out for analog unbalanced. So you've got every single base covered in terms of inputs and outputs. It will record 44.1 and 48K at 24-bit, or, you know, 16-bit if you want it to. It'll also record to MP3. So it's a great unit. I'm really happy with this thing, and it runs on CF cards, not SD cards. And I've just got a 4-gig card in it. Because I don't tend to record buckets of audio to it, I generally record my podcast voice tracks to it and then dump them into Reaper to edit and mix. I basically record one podcast, and once I've recorded that, I copy the audio across to the hard drive and I then delete it off the CF card. So it's not sitting there getting full. You know, this 4 gig card has usually got one file on it at any one time, and that's it. Now, I had a look on eBay. There are one or two of them floating around. Someone's got a brand new one. They want about $1,000 for it. I'm not sure why they are suddenly so expensive. Maybe it's because they're a discontinued unit and were so well spec'd for what they are. I did see a secondhand one that was in Canada. Have a look on eBay, see what you can find. If you can find one of these units around, Tom, I highly recommend it. I love it. I have not had any reason to be dissatisfied with this unit. It's a Marantz PMD 580. I'd put a link in the show notes, except it's a discontinued product. But yeah, a quick Google search, you'll find it. So, but have a look on eBay. You might pick up one secondhand, or yeah, or maybe you're happy to splash out for a new one. So I won't go through all the workflow, because I assume you know what you're doing on that front. If you do need advice on workflow for digitizing your vinyl, then by all means, send me another email and I'd be more than happy to cover that in another episode. Now, last week I mentioned the promotion that the guys at iZotope have got going at the moment, where you can create a video tutorial based on any one of their software products. Host that video anywhere you like, tweet about it with the link to your video and a, you know, a hashtag and an at mention, and you could win $500 worth of iZotope software of your choice. Now, funny story, back in about 2009, actually it was February 09, that's right, I looked it up, I interviewed Nick Deeker, who at the time was the product manager for Ozone, which is iZotope's mastering plugin. It's available in DirectX and VST, and I think these days it's also available in audio units for the Mac community. Absolutely brilliant mastering plugin. I love it. Have always loved it. At the time, Nick set me up with a copy of Ozone 4, which, you know, at the time was the current version. And, you know, he gave me a serial number, and, you know, anyone who knows me knows that I'm the kind of guy who every, you know, 6 to 12 months I reformat my computer and I just reinstall everything from scratch. Well, unbeknownst to me, there was a limit to the number of times I could run the installer. A couple of weeks, a month ago now, I upgraded this computer that I have it in my home studio. The computer I'd been running on for a good 5 years, and it was starting to starting to show its age when it came to some of the heavy lifting that I do with, you know, audio, video editing, some of the Photoshop stuff, you know, my multi-image panoramas, which are, you know, quite often in excess of a gigabyte in size. You know? So it was just starting to struggle. So I upgraded the whole machine, and I think I've future-proofed myself now for a little while. And so I went to run the installer for Ozone, and it installed okay, but then the first time you go to run the plugin, you get a nag screen that says you've got to authorize it. And I've clicked on authorize, you know, I've put in my serial number, I clicked authorize, and it said you've exceeded the number of activations for this executable. And I was like, oh, crap. So I got in touch with the guys at iZotope, and I said, look, you know, this is what's happened. Is there any chance of either A, an extension, or B, would you be interested in setting me up with a copy of Ozone 5? You know, and I'd be more than happy to talk about it on the podcast. Well, Kim Pfluger, who is now the press relations coordinator at iZotope, came back to me and she said, Bruce, we'd love to help you out. We're not only going to set you up with Ozone 5, we're going to set you up with Alloy 2, Nectar 2, and RX3. I was pretty damn stoked when I saw that email. And true to her word, Kim has, through a person who handles all their media licensing stuff, set me up with all four of those plugins, which I'm absolutely wrapped with. RX3, which is the dedicated noise reduction and sort of forensic audio tool, is absolutely mind-boggling. I've only had a brief play with it so far. Interestingly, and those who know my background with Adobe Audition, I've been using Audition ever since I jumped ship away from Adobe Audition. I've been doing all of my multi-track work these days in Reaper, which I absolutely love. But I always have kept Audition on the machine simply for the noise reduction. And whenever I've needed to do any cleaning up of noise, I've always gone back to Audition just for the noise reduction tool. I've got to say, RX3 has now negated my need for Audition. Its noise reduction is leaps and bounds ahead of what Audition is capable of, or at least the version of Audition that I've been using, which was version 3. I was never a fan of the new interface of Audition from CS5 onwards. It's possible that Audition's noise reduction has moved along in sync with where RX3 is at, but certainly the noise reduction that was available in Audition 3 is nowhere near what RX3 offers. So very, very excited about having RX3 in the toolkit, and certainly we'll be getting some use out of that. Alloy and Nectar, I've not yet had much of a chance to spend any time with, but I will do over the coming months. Dave and I are just about to start recording his fifth album, and I will be, you know, using those plugins hopefully quite excessively as we go forward with when I say with the mixing, we're probably 6 months away from starting to mix the album, because we're still putting the songs together and deciding what we're going to track. But looking forward to that, and of course Ozone 5, and you know, thanks to Kim, they set me up with Ozone 5 Advanced, which is just absolutely mind-bogglingly good. I'm currently working on a mix of one of Dave's songs. And this mix is essentially a fully produced version, but it's only going to be a demo. What our plan is to do with this next album is to put a small group of players together, a drummer, a bass player, one extra guitarist, and then go into the studio and actually record a bunch of tracks over a weekend, which will form the basis of the album. And so what Dave and I have been doing is tracking up fully produced demos to give the guys an idea of where we want these songs to go and how we want them to sound. And we'll go into a studio and just get the basic core of the song, you know, drums, bass, guitars, and vocal captured live with a group playing together, so you get that sort of cohesive feel. So what I'm going to play you is just a demo of one of the songs called Tilting at Windmills. And so what you're about to hear is essentially a finished mix with Isotope Trash running over the master bus, just applying a little bit of, you know, saturation to the whole mix. And then we'll start looking at Ozone 5 and what you can do with 5 to finish that mix off. So here we go. This is what the song sounds like without any of the mastering plugin running on the master bus. Here we go. Okay, so that's what the song sounds like at the moment without any mastering thrown on the back end. Now, Ozone 5 is essentially 7 different modules in one, with some really awesome metering tacked onto the back end in the advanced version. The standard version has metering, but Ozone Advanced has really awesome advanced metering. We'll come to that in a minute. One of the things that I've loved about Ozone is the fact that you can restructure the signal path. So yes, you've got these 7 different modules, and by default they're wired in a particular sequence, but you can actually go into, they have a graph, it's kind of like a flowchart if you like, and you can actually drag the units around and reorder the signal flow throughout the 7 modules, which is pretty amazing. What are the 7 modules? Okay. We start with an EQ unit, and this is not just any old EQ. It's 5 bands, and each band you can choose the shape of that particular band, and you can choose between different bell curves, different shelves, high pass, low pass. You can choose some modeling between analog and vintage and all other resonance, all different types of shapes. So you've got this 5-band EQ. Then you've got a reverb unit, and the reverb is basically just there to be like a glue. It's not sort of, you know, you might have different reverbs and things on different things within your mix, but then you just want one acoustic space to kind of glue everything together to make it sound like, you know, the whole performance took place in a warehouse or whatever. And you can use this reverb to do that. And it's quite a nice reverb, and you can tweak all, well, I'm not going to go into all of it, right? There's heaps of stuff you can tweak. There's so much stuff, we'd be here for hours. The next thing is a harmonic exciter. And the harmonic exciter is one of the modules that can run in multiband mode. So you can run it in a single broadband mode, or you can have it as 2-band, 3-band, or 4-band. So, you know, if you're running it as a 4-band exciter, you've got individual control of your lows, your low mids, your high mids, and then your highs. Pretty damn cool. And like I said, there are multiple units within Ozone that run in this particular configuration. We'll get to them as we go. So the next thing is the dynamics control, which is your multiband compressor. Again, can run in 1, 2, 3, or 4 bands. And, you know, all different things. You can set it to limit, to gate, and compress, all within the dynamics module. So it's pretty cool. You've then got a stereo imaging module, which again works as up to 4 bands of multiband. So things like your low frequencies, you can keep, you know, quite narrow to keep your low frequency information evenly spread across both channels. But then as you work through your low mids, your high mids, your highs, you can start to spread it out and create a sense of width if that's what you want to do. And then there's another equalizer, which, you know, by default is put in at the end of the chain to be an EQ that you apply after all of that processing. Not sure that I necessarily feel that that's, you know, a necessary thing, but I guess it's great to have that option there if, you know, if you're the type of person that likes to EQ till the cows come home. And then the seventh thing is the maximizer, which I've always been a huge fan of. This can act as an intelligent limiter. It can also act as a brick wall limiter. So if you absolutely want to, you know, create a piece of 4x2, you can do that. You know, just set your output threshold at, you know, -1 or -0.5 dB and, you know, drive your threshold until you've got a square waveform. If that's your thing, knock yourself out. As well as the limiting, you've got the ability to add dither. So if you are, you know, reducing the word length, as we spoke about, or have spoken about in the past, from, you know, 32 or 24 bit in your multitrack and you want to create a 16 bit master, then you should always be applying dither. Anytime you reduce your word length, you've heard me rattle on about this in the past, apply dither. And so that can be done as well. And then, of course, you've got the meter bridge, which, like I said, is just a phenomenal tool. It's essentially four metering components. The first is your bog standard spectrum analyzer, and you can zoom in both in frequency and in amplitude. So if you want a really close look at your spectrum analysis, you can do that. If you've got your dither activated, you'll actually see the dither happening at the low end of the amplitude range on the spectrum analyzer. The second part is a spectrogram. For those who've used Adobe Audition, very similar to the spectral view in Adobe Audition, you know, where you can see time on your x-axis, frequency on your y-axis, and amplitude is represented by color, where the darker blacks and purples represent low amplitude, and your brighter colors, like your white and yellow, represent high amplitude. And the beauty of the spectrogram is you can run it in 2D or three-dimensional mode, so it's pretty cool. And you can also set the speed at which it scrolls across, so you can choose to essentially widen or narrow the window of all of your audio, so it's pretty cool. I would recommend, obviously, that you have a pretty beefy graphics card if you want to run that excessively fast. I do have a good graphics card, so I can run it pretty quick if I want to, but it's a great tool. Then you've got your standard sort of stereo scope, which shows you a dot field of where the majority of your audio is as it plays, so you can see whether it's sitting in the middle of your stereo field, and for those bits that are panned out to the sides, you can see how far they're spread. You've also got a stereo correlation meter as well. And then finally, you've got your regular meters, your peak and your RMS meters, and they also register LUFS. I know I need to get my head around this stuff a little bit more because I'm not sure how much of a difference there is between LUFS and LKFS. I don't think there's much of a difference. But the beauty is that if you are mastering stuff for broadcast, you've got that metering built in so that you can, you know, make sure that what you are sending out adheres to the broadcast requirements of your country of choice. So, absolutely fantastic stuff. So, let's just have a listen to this song. I'm not going to use the equalizer or the reverb. I'm fairly happy with where my mix is at the moment. Like I said, it's only a demo, so yeah, I don't have to get too precious about this. I am going to use the harmonic exciter though, so I'm going to switch that on. I'm running it in the four band mode. I've got my crossover points set around about 300 hertz, 2k and 10k. So essentially my lows are going to be everything below 300. My low mids will be 300 to 2k. My upper mids will be 2k to 10k, and then my highs will be everything above 10k. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play the song again, and I'm just going to tweak the amount of excitation across those four bands. Hopefully you'll hear each of the bands responding differently. I'll drive them excessively so that you can kind of tune in on what each band is doing. And then I'll talk to you in a minute. Here we go.
Prayers of souls departed.
so come on. Okay, so hopefully you would have heard the four bands being driven excessively, and then I pulled the sliders back to what I thought were suitable levels. Okay, so the next module I'm going to activate is the dynamics control. Now, as I have said at numerous points in the past, multiband compression is something that in the hands of a newbie can get you into more trouble than you want to know about. You really need to be, I think less is more with multiband compression. You can really go over the top, and yeah, I think being sensible about how much you apply is a great place to start. So what I'm going to do, my approach with this is I'm going to just add subtle amounts of compression. I'm going to set my ratios will probably be somewhere between about 1.5 to 2.5 to 1. And then I will set thresholds accordingly and then apply a little bit of boost just to give this whole mix a bit of color. When I've adjusted all four bands, I'll then do a bypass while the song is playing so you can hear before compression and after compression, and hopefully that'll kind of highlight exactly what we achieved with the multiband compression. Here we go. Okay, so hopefully there, just before the end of the, you would have heard me hit the bypass switch and the whole thing just sounded a little bit duller. And then as I reactivated it, you would have heard the compression kick in again. And it kind of, it's a combination between compression and EQ, because by adjusting the amount of boost on each gain, you're essentially acting like an equalizer. Okay, so now I'm going to turn on the stereo imaging, and again, like I said, I probably won't do any stereo imaging on the low frequencies. I'll just have a look at the low mids, the high mids, and the highs, and see if we can introduce a little bit of spatial enhancement to the mids and the high frequencies. Here we go. Okay, so I've activated some of the stereo imaging. Now what I'm going to do is I'm just going to play that again, and I'm just going to bypass only the stereo imaging, and hopefully you'll hear the difference between before and after. Here we go. Okay, so hopefully you could hear that. It's possible that once this is encoded to an MP3, the differences might be a little less noticeable, but hopefully they've translated okay. And the final thing would be to activate the peak limiter. I'm not actually going to do that as I'm recording this podcast, because obviously when I come to editing this whole voice track and all of these music samples together, I'm going to want to apply peak limiting to the final MP3 file for the podcast. So imagine that the peak limiting that you're about to hear happened at the time that I was recording the podcast, when in actual fact it happened at the time when I was mixing the final podcast together, if that makes sense. For me, like I said, it In fact, I probably don't even need to demonstrate that because I don't want to hit you with this super loud sample of the song that's going to blow your head off in relation to my spoken word. So just imagine that, you know, the peak limiter will allow you to then, you know, create a piece of 4x2 if that's what you want to do. Or if you're like me, after Ozone 5, I have a plugin which shows me a VU meter, which responds on a 300 millisecond delay. And I mean, I could probably get away with that now. Now that I've got Ozone 5, you know, I've got, you know, long-term metering within the meter bridge of Ozone 5 Advanced, so I probably don't need my VU meter plugin. But I'm old school, and I kind of like my VU meters, and I like watching the needles flicking up and hitting zero, and I always have that plugin, and I've spoken about it before. It's a freebie. It's from Antress, A-N-T-R-E-S-S, and it's called Modern Meter, and there's Modern Meter and Modern Meter Black. They're just, you know, a white version and a black version. It's a free VST plugin, and that's always my last thing in my chain. So what I would do with the maximizer in Ozone is I would have the Antress VU meter visible, and I would then just drive the threshold of the Ozone 5 peak limiter until my VU meter was showing that I was hitting zero VU. What that tells me is that I'm then getting peaks hitting minus one, which is what I want, and my average is going to reconstruct nicely in on an analog system, all right, without, you know, completely falling apart. And as for the metering, I can't really show you that in an audio-only context. One of these days I will sit down and create a video podcast about all of these fantastic metering options in Ozone 5. Okay, so to wrap up, a little portion of the song again, and what I will do is play it now with all of the processing that we've added, and you know, we've really only used three of the modules in Ozone 5, the harmonic exciter, the multiband dynamics, and the stereo imaging, and then I'll apply some, you know, peak leveling, you know, in the final master of this podcast. But what I'll do is, while this is playing, I'll hit the complete global bypass for Ozone 5. So you'll get the, you know, the harmonic exciter, the dynamics, and the stereo imaging will all disappear, and you'll be amazed at how horrible the mix will sound without it. We've kind of grown used to the sound of the mastering that's going on. So here you go, before and after. Alrighty, hopefully that's given you an idea of what you can do with Ozone 5. Like I said, I've always been a fan of this. I think it's beautifully designed. It sounds great. And my approach, you know, with the next album will be, I will apply, you know, as many modules as I feel are necessary for each song, but I won't apply the maximizer to the individual songs. What I will do is render out 24-bit versions of the song mixes after we've tracked with the band, this is, and I will leave those masters, you know, with peaks of minus 10 or minus 6 or whatever, and then when we're ready to create, you know, a final version of the whole album, we'll sequence the songs in order, adjust the volumes of the individual songs so that when they play back as a sequence, they feel like they're at the right volume in relation to each other. And the reason that changes is because of the instrumentation and the arrangement of every song. You can't just put every song on at exactly the same peak level. They don't always work like that. You sometimes need to raise this song a couple of dB, drop that one by a couple of dB for them to feel cohesive on playback. And then what I will do is apply peak limiting to the album as a whole unit so that everything feels like it's at the same relative volume. And what you would find then is that if you were to rip that album, you'd find some songs are going to look more peak limited than others. But at least you've got this nice cohesive feel to the volume overall. But everything's mastered to minus 1 dB. Make sense? Yeah. I know what I'm talking about. Hopefully you do too. All right. Any questions, please drop me an email, studio@audiotu.com. Sorry, I know this has been a bit of a long one, but hopefully it's been enjoyable. And like I said, have yet to dive into Alloy and Nectar, but we'll do so over the coming months. And we'll certainly get around to doing a video on Trash. Any questions, comments, feedback, please let me know. And until I speak with you next, take care.
Sign Language.
Another audiotu.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out
signlanguagepodcast.com
or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email studio@audiotu.com.